I'm Willow Belden, and you're listening to Out There, the podcast that explores big questions through intimate stories outdoors. One quick announcement before we get started. We are hiring. We're looking for someone to join us on a freelance basis to handle ad sales for the show. If this sounds up your alley, or if you know someone who might be interested, you can find the full job description at our website, outtherepodcast.com. Applications are due January 4th, and all the info you need to apply is at our website. And now, on to our story for today. For most of us, family relationships involve some level of tension. We stress out about holiday visits, we argue with that one problematic relative, we agonize over how to reconcile our own life choices with our parents' wishes. But what happens when the rift is bigger? When tensions reach a boiling point, or worse? How do you handle that? Can hatred be extinguished once it's gotten that bad? Today's story comes to us from a man named Adrian Fernandez, who came to hate his own father more than anyone else in the world. I'll let Adrian take it from here.
I didn't always hate my dad. For most of my childhood, he was my hero, the funniest man I knew, the hard worker, the immigrant who'd escaped communist Cuba to create a comfortable life and start a family here in the U.S. He taught me to play football, to fight hard no matter the odds, and to always chase my dreams. But then one day, when I was 23 years old, everything changed. It started with a phone call. Mom told me that Dad was in the hospital. When I got there, she and my brother told me the doctors believed my dad had had a stroke. He and Mom had been in the mall when Dad's left side went numb. He'd argued with the L.L. Bean employee who insisted on calling him an ambulance. He was mostly quiet when I made my way to his bed. Dad's a Cuban refugee. He came to the U.S. with his mom, little brother, and nothing but the clothes on their back. His father had to stay behind, and he didn't get to see him again for 7 years. He had to grow up fast, and as a result, wasn't one for showing any form of weakness. Even as I held his hand and told him how much I loved him, there wasn't much response. I was still gripping his calloused hand when Dad fell into a seizure. He kicked violently, and his face twisted into a purple mess. His tongue hung out of his mouth like a dog on a hot day. I panicked and held on tighter. And then the doctors and nurses rushed in, injecting him with something that shut his whole body down. In the next few days, we'd find out that Dad had a brain tumor. A month later, he went into surgery. He made it out okay, physically, but mentally, he wasn't the same. We didn't know it then, but the next few months would be the greatest challenge we, as a family, had ever faced. After the tumor was cut out, Dad started chemo. Mom jumped into caretaker mode, big time. She drove to doctor's appointments, cooked, cleaned, and waited on him like an indentured servant. You'd think that kind of devotion would elicit lots of thank yous from my dad. But on the contrary, he didn't seem grateful at all. He grew increasingly short with my mother and was downright nasty if she didn't do everything he asked. One day, he crossed the line. Someone had sent him a fruit basket, and he asked Mom to put together a plate for him, but without any banana. When she brought him a plate with banana, Dad snapped. He yelled at my mom and threw the plate across the kitchen. I exploded. I told him that he should be ashamed of himself, that if it wasn't for her, there'd be no one who gave a shit if he was comfortable throughout the chemo process, and that if he spoke to her that way again, I'd knock him out myself. Then I slammed the door and left the house. The next night, I came home to find my mother sobbing in a heap on the kitchen floor. When I asked what happened, she handed me some crumpled sheets of yellow paper. It was a letter from my dad, telling her that he was leaving the family. I flew into a violent rage. I told my mother that I was done with Dad, that if I saw him, I'd crack his skull open. My whole life, he taught me that the most important thing was to not let anyone cause problems for me or the people I loved. And now he was the one doing it. In a fit, I grabbed all of his stuff and dumped it in the driveway. Business clothes, toiletries, computer, his prized golf clubs. I took Dad's brand new Callaway driver and snapped it over my knee. I felt a crazed satisfaction and kept riding the wave of rage that washed over me. Later, I called my dad and told him how it was now my life's mission to destroy everything that meant something to him. After I hung up the phone, the wave of anger receded. I collapsed in a fit of tears. Together, Mom and I sat on my front steps, holding each other and crying. I cried and cried and cried. Now that I thought about it, my family had always been fighting. Mom and Dad loved each other deeply, but they were constantly at odds. There were arguments over finances, arguments over what one of them had done to the other decades earlier, arguments over which one of them was a worse parent. As a kid, I'd sit in my room listening to them scream, trying to decipher who had done what, who I should direct my resentment towards. Sitting on the front steps, I told Mom that all I'd ever wanted was a happy, functioning family. I clung to that wish for years, thinking that maybe after I made it in the entertainment business, I'd be able to throw enough money around to make everyone happy, to wash all our problems away. But now I knew for sure I'd never be able to make that happen. Time had run out. This fight was a level of broken that couldn't be fixed. A week later, Mom and I took a trip to Lake George to try and relax. I lied to my bosses at the time, telling them my dad was back in the hospital so I could just get away and shut off my brain. I drank heavily out of the lake, but found some peace on the water and in the woods. There was no noise, no fits of rage, no sound of my mother as she shuddered and cried, just a light breeze and the calm lapping of water against the shore. In the morning, I'd wake before the sun was up and just drive the perimeter of the lake, windows open, stopping every now and then to get out and walk. My dad had loved the outdoors. He talked about escaping the city in his early 20s, finding true happiness in the Kittatinny Mountains. He had a master's degree in environmental education, and at one point his dream was to spend his life outside. I grew up in the suburbs, though, and while we took trips here and there to hike or fish, I never gave it much thought. But there, at the lake, I began to understand. My rage and pain were dulled. I was calmer. Finally, I could just breathe and be. I liked it so much that I lied to my bosses again, told them things had gotten even worse, and returned to the lake the next week. But once my mini escape was over, I couldn't run away from my responsibilities anymore. And things only got harder after that. First, we found out my father hadn't been paying our mortgage and had to sell our house before the bank foreclosed. Mom moved into an apartment. Then she lost her job. I also found out that someone had been harassing her at work. Shortly after that, Mom had a mini stroke and was hospitalized. A few weeks later, she had a nervous breakdown and was admitted to an inpatient psych facility. All of this occurred in the span of maybe 3 months. My world had been shattered, and my own father was responsible. Everything seemed beyond repair. The next few months went by at a crawl. I was never really present, no matter where I was or who I was with. Thoughts of my father consumed my mind. I wanted him to hurt more than anything. I wanted to embarrass him, ruin him, bring his world down like he'd done to me. Sometimes I'd circle the block around my grandmother's apartment where he'd been staying and stare at his car, fantasizing about putting a brick through the windshield. To make matters worse, work was bringing me down too. I'd spent the last 3 years working what I thought was my dream job, as the producer of one of the bigger talk shows on SiriusXM. But over the past year, I'd become miserable and depressed. I was tired of commuting to Midtown Manhattan from Jersey, tired of busting my ass for something I didn't truly love doing. I was beginning to realize that this wasn't what I was meant to do. It would never make me happy. I felt trapped, constantly seesawing between intense periods of rage and then depression. It was an awful period of my life. But what I didn't know at the time was that hitting rock bottom in my career would actually, in a weird way, enable what came next for my family. If I hadn't been so utterly miserable at work, I might never have tried to fix what was broken in my relationship with my father. It started after a night of scrolling through Netflix, looking for something to numb my brain. I stumbled across a documentary called Unbranded, about a group of friends who rode wild Mustangs from the Mexican border up to Canada. The idea of being out in the wilderness, focused on adventure and nothing more, blew my mind. I could do something like that. I needed to do something like that. A week up at Lake George had brought me peace. What could an extended trip do? Or an entire life outdoors? I began to read Outside Magazine, found podcasts that focused on the outdoors, and learned that there's this special outdoorsy breed of person called a dirtbag. They give up a normal lifestyle and live out of a vehicle or tent full time. They travel from place to place pursuing their passions, whether it be climbing, kayaking, or hiking. And they do this full time. This is their real life. It's not a vacation. I decided that I wanted to be a dirtbag. The idea that I could throw away societal expectations, move from one place to another while living out of a vehicle, to just pursue fun forever, was too good to pass up. I wanted that. I wanted to see all of America's wild places, get out of the New York metro area, leave all that pain behind, and just flat out live. But of course, I still had to make a living somehow. That's when I first got the idea of writing about the outdoors. Throughout my childhood, teachers had told me I was gifted with words, and later I went on to study creative writing in college. But I hadn't done any writing in years, and I wanted to get back to it. Outdoor adventure writing became my dream. Over beers, I blabbered to my friends about this culture I'd discovered of free-living, full-time adventuring. Some of them feigned interest. Most of them listened for a moment, then dismissed me. One or two told me it wasn't realistic. I continued hanging with my friends, but every night we spent out, every morning I spent commuting to Midtown, every evening on my computer doing show prep, I grew sick and tired of the life I was living. When we'd sit around drinking beer, I'd feel a lump form in my throat and drop to my chest. Pressure built inside me every time we slipped into another conversation about the NFL or who was making what. I wanted to be gone. I wanted to pursue my dream of this dirtbag writer life. The problem was, my friends were right. It was unrealistic. Sure, my dad had sometimes taken me fishing as a kid. But my only real outdoor experience as an adult was the occasional drunken camping trip with my buddies. Outside Magazine and National Geographic weren't going to start giving me assignments anytime soon.
Hey, it's Willow. We'll get back to the story in a moment. But first, a word from our sponsor. Support for this episode comes from Thrive Market, making healthy living easy and affordable for everyone. Thrive Market is an online store that sells the same kinds of organic, non-GMO products you could find at, say, Whole Foods, but for less money. You can get everything from vitamins to fresh seafood to beauty products, all shipped straight to your door, and prices are up to 30% less than retail. It's also super easy to filter their catalog by dietary preferences. For example, you can easily search for items that are gluten-free, non-GMO, vegan, whatever, so you don't have to spend forever reading labels. Right now, there's a special deal for Out There listeners. You can take 25% off your first order and get a 30-day free trial when you go to thrivemarket.com/outthere. That's thrivemarket.com/outthere. And Keep in mind, Thrive Market's prices are already up to 30% off retail. Now, with this deal, you can get an extra 25% off your first order, plus a free 30-day trial. Again, that's all at thrivemarket.com/out there. And as always, we have a link to that on our website as well. And now, back to the story.
A few weeks passed, and I spent most of them half-assing it at work, drinking heavily on the weekends, and trying to figure out how to make my dream happen. One morning, I woke up hungover and decided that I was tired of being in limbo. I needed help. And as much as I hated to admit it, the only person who could give me that help was my dad. In my suburban existence, he was the only person I knew with outdoors experience. The only person I could turn to for guidance in building my new dirtbag life. Things had thawed a little between us by then. In early spring, my mom told me she had started speaking to Dad again and was occasionally spending time with him. They would grab dinner or just sit together and talk in her apartment. At first, I was incensed. How could she even think to let him back into our lives? But she tried to calm me down, to reassure me that he had changed. He'd been seeing a therapist. For the first time in the 40-plus years she'd known him, he was admitting to some of his faults. When I finally saw Dad myself, at Mom's apartment, he was sitting on the couch, sunken into the cushions. Shame was clearly painted across his face. I remember how peculiar it was to feel both relief and rage at the same time. I wasn't gentle with him. I told him if he ever hurt my mother or me or my brother, ever showed anything but complete devotion to her and to us, he would lose me forever. There would be no coming back next time. Dad agreed without protest. "I'm sorry," he told me. So a few weeks later, when I realized I needed help figuring out my next step in life, and that my dad was the only person who could provide that help, I drove over to my parents' apartment. I ate a meal with them, and I asked Dad to go for a hike with me that Sunday. He agreed right away. As the weekend approached, I felt a sense of trepidation. I wasn't sure how the hike with my dad would go or if I could trust him. But despite my misgivings, I was relieved at the possibility of us becoming a part of each other's lives once more. I began to breathe a bit easier. There was an uneasiness between my father and I as we hiked through Stoke State Forest in Jersey that weekend. The conversation was strained at first. We stumbled through the underbrush and clumsily tried to talk about how I could change my career track. I told Dad about the crazy scheme I'd cooked up. I told him I needed him, that I wanted his help. He tried to hide it, but I could see him swell with emotion. He seemed elated at the idea of a second chance with his youngest son. Getting back into the car, he told me he believed in me and that he was there to help. Looking back, I don't know if he really thought I could make a career in the outdoors or if it was just a last-ditch effort at reconnecting with me. But at the time, his reassurance was comforting. I still felt I had to keep him at an arm's length, that I couldn't really trust the man. But his encouragement made me start to actually believe in my dream. About 6 months later, I took a job as a raft guide outside Yellowstone National Park and put in my 2 weeks' notice at Sirius. I knew I'd have to work my way up from the bottom in my new field, and I figured river guiding was as good a way as any to start. At the very least, it seemed like an enjoyable way to spend a summer without going broke. As soon as the plans were firmed up, Dad and I got to work. I spent 2 years living in an apartment in downtown Hoboken, with exposed brick walls, a washer-dryer combo, and our own back patio. I'd be spending the next 3.5 months living out of a tent, and I had no idea where to start. Dad took me to a camping store, and he explained what gear I'd need, what socks were right for hiking, what to do if I ended up with a hole in my tent. He paid for everything that day. Over the next few weeks, he'd call me in the middle of the afternoon to tell me about some other piece of equipment he'd picked up for me. I'd listen to stories from his time directing a summer camp or taking a two-week survival course in the Canadian wilderness, how he'd caught a fish for dinner with a pink starburst rolled into the shape of a worm. Slowly, it became easier for us to talk. Together, we took my new tent out in the park next to Mom's apartment, and he showed me how to set it up. I felt annoyed at times. I was aggravated at the idea of the person who hurt me most trying to tell me how to do something. At the same time, I was grateful to have someone holding my hand, helping me, giving me the skills I'd need to succeed. It felt good to have someone doing the things a dad is supposed to do again. Still, even though things were shifting, I was wary of our relationship and slightly uncomfortable. What Dad had done to my mom was inexcusable. And if he'd done it once, he could do it again. Only now, I'd be 2,000 miles away and wouldn't be there to protect Mom. The idea of being rendered powerless by distance terrified me. Would my family fall apart again while I was off dicking around on some river in Montana, pretending to be a writer? Had my dad really changed? Could we truly move forward after such a powerful rift? In Mom's living room, we organized all my new gear. Dad walked me through every single item, made sure I had everything I needed. It felt like at 25 years old, I was being sent off to summer camp. As Dad and I sat there, and I watched him put all this together for me, my doubts and reservations started to melt a little. Maybe my dream had become our dream. Maybe. I left on Mother's Day. In the parking garage of Mom's apartment complex, I hugged her and held her tight. I was scared to leave her behind, but confident that after all she'd been through in the past year, nothing could stop her. I hugged Dad and he held me tight. We both cried and I shuddered when I heard him suck back snot and grip me tighter. I didn't want to let go and neither did he, but finally we did. I prayed that he wouldn't hurt me or Mom or my brother again. When I pulled into Montana and saw the Gallatin Mountain Range for the first time, I was overcome with emotion. It wasn't one of those moments where you feel awe at the natural world or anything cliche like that. I was filled with sadness because my dad couldn't be there with me to see these unbelievable mountains. Raft guide training was intense. 8 hours or more on the river every day, occasionally flipping boats in 40-degree water. I was exhausted, both mentally and physically. But I was happy. A week and a half after training ended, I was officially a raft guide. I called my dad and almost cried. The dream was starting to take shape. Over the course of the summer, I tried to get in touch with my dad whenever I was in cell range. We talked about my struggles on the river, adjusting to life in a tent, girls, and how difficult it was to write anything of substance. He preached patience to me and never missed a chance to tell me how much he believed. It felt good, and I realized I was leaning on him like a person leans on a father. But the nagging fear still held on, the fear that he might turn nasty again, the fear that this seeming truce was a sham. And then, in early August, he and Mom came out to visit. We toured Yellowstone over the course of 10 days. We saw bison, elk, pronghorn, hung out at the Old Faithful Inn, drank beer together, and watched the geyser go off. We argued and laughed and marveled at the park together. At one point, Dad turned to me and told me he never thought he'd make it to Yellowstone. As a kid from Cuba, he was so happy that I got him out there. Then finally, they came rafting with me. Most river guides say that if your family's in town, you better be on your game. For some reason, mistakes get made when relatives or friends are visiting. I don't know if it's overconfidence or a desire to show off, but someone always seems to fall out of the boat. So when Mom and Dad came out on a boat with me, I was overly cautious. Mom is prone to motion sickness, so coupling that with my fear of sending my 60-year-old parents for a swim, I ran a fairly conservative line down the river. I stayed away from anything that posed even the slightest threat of dumping somebody into the water. After we made it through all the rough stuff, I breathed a sigh of relief. What was left in front of us was mostly slack water, and I quickly reverted to tour guide and showed off all my corny river jokes to Mom and Dad. Then we approached Swimmer's Rapids, a fairly tame little wave train where we give customers the opportunity to hop out of the boat. When I offered it up to my boat, Dad jumped at the chance. I instructed him to slide off the side of the boat and to not let go of the perimeter line under any circumstances. Dad slid off, went into the water, and immediately floundered. He held onto the rope for a moment, then we hit a bump, and he let go, flailing in the waves. I panicked. "Dad!" I screamed. Really, there was no reason to panic. We let people hop into Swimmer's Rapids for a reason. It's basically risk-free. But seeing my dad in a position of weakness sent fear coursing through me, and my heart exploded. I lunged toward his side of the boat and grabbed his life jacket. In the end, Dad was fine. But for the last 2 miles of the trip, I was in a daze. I couldn't get out of my own head. A few months ago, I had wanted to put a brick through this man's windshield. I wanted him to hurt, to suffer, to feel nothing but pure, unrelenting pain. But here we were, in Montana, on the Yellowstone River, and the slightest threat to his safety threw me into a frenzy. I realized then and there that all the anger, the hate, and the pain had subsided. All I had left for my dad was genuine, unconditional love. Out on this river, more than 2,000 miles from home, I finally felt that we were father and son again. My love for him was real and genuine for the first time in a long time, and I couldn't help but think that we were going to be okay. If things fell apart again, so be it. That was out of my control. Everything was. Whether I wanted to or not, I loved my dad again, and that overpowered all the doubt, the fear, and the violent rage that had consumed me for so long. When I hugged my parents goodbye at the end of their trip, I had a hard time letting go. But there was no uncertainty this time. We were a family again. 8 months later, my first story about dating and living in a van was published on Outdoor Research's Verticulture site. My dream was our dream, and it was now real.
That was Adrian Fernandez. He spent the past year traveling all over the American West, living in his van, trying to run rivers, climb rocks, and make it as an outdoor adventure writer. He's currently a dog sledding guide in Colorado, and you can follow along with his adventures on Instagram at @IamAdrian. I wanted to extend a huge thank you to all of the listeners who bought us gifts from our holiday wish list. We had put together a list of audio equipment that would really help us out, but that we couldn't afford ourselves, and man, did you guys come through for us. We were completely overwhelmed by your generosity. I'm actually using one of our new pieces of equipment right now. It is a new studio microphone, and this is its maiden recording voyage. It is so nice not to be making do with my field recording kit in the studio. So again, thank you all so much. You are absolutely the best. And now it's time for community classifieds. Our classified section is a way for all of you to let each other know about events, books, products, etc. that you think the out there community would enjoy. Today's classified ad comes to us from Mountain Literary. When you're home planning your next adventure, or maybe sitting in front of the fireplace, and you're wishing you had something new and unique to read, Consider Mountain Literary, where you can find the Mountaintop series of novels by William Graney and a selection of used adventure books. Featured novels include The Ways of Autumn, which won a gold medal in the 2018 Human Relations Indie Book Awards, and the 2017 silver medal winner called Mountain Time. Book descriptions and links to purchase can be found at mountaintopusa.com. That's mountaintopusa.com. If you'd like to take out a classified ad of your own, just head over to our website, outtherepodcast.com, and click Contact. There's a super easy form to fill out, and as soon as we hear from you, we'll be in touch about all the details. A quick reminder that we are hiring an advertising coordinator. If you're interested in the position or you know someone who might be, we've got the full job description plus details on how to apply at our website, outtherepodcast.com. Applications are due January 4th. That's it for this episode. Our marketing and business development director is Alex Egerking. Our theme music was written by Jared Arnold, and Laura Johnston heads up our ambassador program. We'll see you in 2 weeks, and in the meantime, Happy New Year, have a beautiful day, be bold, go outside, and find your dreams.